So without delay, I'm going to reintroduce Dr. Fitzgibbons to come up and talk. And he's going to tell us all about our complications of putting prosthetics for esophageal hiatus.
Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. This is quite a sensitive topic that I'm going to talk about today because there's a lot of controversy about whether we should be reinforcing our crural closures, especially in large hernias. And I think it's a very important issue because it can result in quite a bit of morbidity for our patients. Here's my disclosures, no conflict of interest with this talk. Now, by way of background, if we look at the normal classification of a hiatal hernia, we've got type 1 through 4. We're really talking only about large hiatal hernias here. I don't think anybody would use mesh in this day and age with a small type 1 sliding hiatal hernia. So type 2, type 3, and type 4 is what we're talking about, the paraesophageals that are large. And by that, I mean at least 50% of the stomach should be in the chest. What is the result of that? Well, we see patients with chest pain, early satiety, dysphagia, vomiting, gastric volvulus as a result of this stomach being in the chest. This is just a picture of type 3 and type 4 paraesophageal hernias, showing the stomach in type 3 and the stomach and colon in type 4. Typical picture of this problem. This is an endoscopic appearance of a paraesophageal hernia, very typical of. What are the demographics of patients with these large hernias? 2-to-1 female to male ratio. The median age is 61, which is older than the ordinary sliding hernias, which is 48. And this just shows this in graphic form that the paraesophageal and large hiatal hernia patients tend to be older. So fact number one, elective repair is in the best interest of many patients with large hiatal hernias, especially with the laparoscopic approach. Is that true? Yes, because quality of life is improved, especially given the laparoscopic approach, and emergent surgery is avoided. This is a paper looking at quality of life in relationship to repairing these large hiatal hernias. It was a multicenter prospective randomized trial, and three methods were used to repair the hernias. One was just simple crural closure. The other was repair with either a onlay or inlay augmentation with either a biological mesh surgicist or a synthetic mesh tie mesh, which is a combination of titanium and polypropylene. And then the SF36 was administered to these patients at 3, 6, 12, and 24 months. Remember, this SF36 has 8 dimensions which measure both physical and mental quality of life issues. And you can see that in both the physical and the mental subscales, there was improvement in quality of life from baseline preoperatively, no matter which way you did it, whether you did it with sutures, synthetic mesh, or a biologic. The important point is that this operation does appear to improve quality of life of these patients. Now, what about laparoscopy? Has that added much to our ability to treat these patients? This group looked at the NISQIP data, which is so popular now today because it's such a large patient population. And they looked at the open and laparoscopic paraesophageal hernia repairs in 4,470 patients, of which 2,800 were done laparoscopically and 1,600 were done open. Now, the open repair group had significantly greater 30-day mortality, and incidence of infection, respiratory complications, transfusion requirements, and sepsis. So clearly, the laparoscopic operation does add a lot to our ability to treat these patients safely. Now, they noted that mesh and versus non-mesh had no statistically difference in any of the parameters they studied, and they had no problems with erosion. But we've got to remember that this is only 30-day data. This CRIP only goes out to 30 days, so that wouldn't really tell you much about a problem down the road with mesh. But nevertheless, these authors chose to put this statement in their paper. These data should reduce any concern for complications resulting from the use of mesh to augment a paraesophageal hernia repair, given the known decrease in short-term recurrence and no increase in perioperative morbidity, we advocate for the placement of mesh. I'm really surprised at this article at this time, this late in 2014, given the what I'm going to present later on in this talk. I think this is a little bit insensitive. So these guys are on my naughty list for next Christmas. Now, what about elective surgery? Should it be encouraged in our patients? This is Jeff Peters, a well-respected surgeon who was from Buffalo at this time. And he studied 127 patients from 2000 to 2006, of which 104 were elective and the rest were emergent. Now, the emergent cases were older and had more comorbidities, but nevertheless, the results were dramatically different in the two groups. Mortality was 22% versus 1% for emergent versus elective. Major complications, 30 versus 3%. Minor complications, 43 versus 19. So, and multivariate analysis confirmed the same findings. So clearly, an emergent operation for an intrathoracic stomach is a serious situation and dramatically increases morbidity and mortality. So their conclusion was that emergent surgical repair of an intrathoracic stomach was associated with markedly higher mortality and morbidity than elective repair. Although the patients undergoing urgent repair were a little bit sicker, still the difference was so dramatic that it was felt that patients with these large hernias should be encouraged if they're otherwise fit. Fact number two, a repair of hiatal hernia by primary curloplasty is associated with a high recurrence rate, especially when large. Well, that's true. This is a table of series with radiological follow-up, and if you look at the column that I outlined there, you can see how high the recurrence rate is, up to 43% when you check these patients out with radiology, with a barium esophagram. The recurrence rate is quite high. This is another series from Lukatich, another highly respected esophageal surgeon. And the bottom line is on the top of that graph, and I'll highlight it here. You can see even in his hands, 15% radiological recurrence rate. So there's no question that without mesh, recurrence rate's pretty high. Well, fact number three, hiatal hernia recurrences are commonly asymptomatic. Well, that's true. I just showed you this data, and you can see that even though he had a 15% recurrence rate, only 3.2% had any symptoms. And this is Blair Job, who was at the University of Oregon at this time, another well-respected esophageal surgeon, 52 patients with a laparoscopic heel repair for large hiatal hernias. They did esophagrams at a mean of 37 months, and you can see that they revealed a recurrence rate of 32%, of whom 36% were asymptomatic. This is another study from Emory here, John Hunter's group, 136 patients between 1993 and 1999, 36 follow-up esophagrams at 1 year, 14 anatomical recurrences, but only 6 had symptoms. So recurrence is a problem, but the symptoms are commonly not there. So what's the significance? Probably nothing. Fact number four, the use of prosthetic material for hiatal hernia repair will decrease the incidence of recurrence. That's true. Here's a table listing multiple series where mesh has been used, and you can see the recurrence rate drops almost to zero in these. Now, this is not with the radiological control, but still, the dramatic difference is obvious. So this is another study. This is a collective review and a critical analysis of 1,368 laparoscopic procedures for large hiatal hernias. It was a combination of case series, retrospective reviews, prospective studies, and non-randomized trials. And the patients were divided up into two groups, a group with primary suture repair and then a group that either had reinforcement of the crews or actually an inlay. And the results were a marked decreased recurrence rate for the prosthetic people and no reports of erosion. So the conclusion there was that current data tend to support the use of prosthetic materials for hiatal hernia repair in both routine and the repair of large paraesophageal hernias. Now, prosthetic mesh and the repair of recurrent diaphragmatic hernias. This is another study, 551 patients who underwent laparoscopic fundal placation for GERD. This is a study from Israel. They took the first half of their patients when they didn't use mesh and compared them to a second group where they started using consecutively mesh routinely. And they noted a markedly decreased in their recurrence rate as with the other studies. And again, no difference in postoperative dysphagia and no complications related to the use of mesh. And in this care case, they used polypropylene. So their conclusion was the results of the study suggest that polypropylene mesh reinforcement increases success rate for laparoscopic hiatal hernia repair without an excessive amount of complications. And this prompted a letter to the editor published in Surgery. And I'll just read it, a quotation from that letter. The consequences of anatomical recurrence of a paraesophageal hernia are unknown in high-risk patients. Therefore, the primary procedure to repair the paraesophageal hernia has to be as effective as possible to avoid a recurrence. We suggest that ongoing discussions should be about the type of mesh and the mesh fixation technique, implying that it's a given that mesh is safe and good to use and we should be using it very liberally. Well, it seems attractive to put this mesh in. Here's a patient. This is a video that Brent Matthews sent me. There you can see the furrow has been closed and then buttressed with strips of prosthetic material. And then a piece of stratus is placed over the top of that to reinforce the closure. In their case, they suture the prosthesis to the crews, as you can see here. Looks pretty nice. And when they're all finished, you can see what it looks like. The problem I have with this is you can see how that fundal placation just lays right on the mesh, right on this material. And it just seems to me that it's just asking for trouble. And this is a video from our shop. This is a recurrent hernia. And that's where we tend to use prosthetics, although as you'll see later, we have to go kicking and screaming to use any prosthetic material. But sometimes these redos do require it. So here we have the crural closure. And we prefer bovine pericardium. And that's what you'll see here. If we have to use mesh, we prefer the biologic, the bovine pericardium. And the suture assist works nice for if you're going to suture it. Now, unlike the other video where we just had the U-shaped prosthesis, this goes circumferentially around the entire hiatus. So that completes the reinforcement. Well, everything seems to be great here. Right? We should all be using this mesh, obviously, but not so fast. Maybe everything isn't so great in Camelot after all. There's growing concern about the incidence of mesh-associated complications despite the even recent literature I've already shown you. Foreign material in the esophageal hiatus has had a very problematic, troubled history. polypropylene has been known to erode into the stomach, and I'll show you a picture of that in a minute. Plegets, the angel stick prosthesis, which was very popular for a while until it eroded so much that it had to be taken off the market. Gastric bands are known to erode into the stomach when used for obesity surgery. This is a picture of in a child of polypropylene eroding into the stomach after a fundoplication case report. And there have been other case reports in the literature, even since the 1990s, of various problems with mesh placed at the hiatus. But this was probably the first series that was published which outlined the problem. Surgeons across the country, as they got together, all had incidental and anecdotal cases, either in their own practices or referred to them. And Dr. Philippi from my institution put together 29 of them, got all the histories of them, and published a series about these 28 cases in surgical endoscopy. So what were the characteristics of the 28 patients? Well, most of them were laparoscopic, 26 versus 2 open surgeries. The mesh types varied, polypropylene, EPTFE, biological mesh, dual mesh, didn't really make any difference. Presenting symptoms were dysphagia, heartburn, epigastric pain. And the main reoperative findings in these patients was mesh erosion in 17, esophageal stricture in 6, and just dense fibrosis in 5 patients. So what was the treatment? In 13 of the patients, mesh removal and revision was successful and was all that was necessary. But in another 10 of these patients, a much more serious operation had to be performed, either an esophagectomy or a gastrectomy. Some of the patients could be managed non-surgically with repeated dilatations or endoscopic removal of an eroded prosthesis. Some of these patients were successfully treated that way. So the outcome of these 29 patients with their reoperative surgery was no immediate postoperative mortality. Five patients required a feeding tube for nutrition. 2 patients died 3 months after surgery of unknown causes. We weren't able to track them down. And no apparent relationship between mesh, whatever. There's no mesh that's incriminated more one than the other. You can see this is the breakdown of the various types of prostheses used in the 28 patients. The most common was EPTFE, followed by polypropylene, and then followed by biological mesh. And this is just a graphic form of what happened to these patients, showing the various operations the patients had to undergo. And having an esophagectomy or a total gastrectomy for this condition is a lot to give up for symptoms of a parasophageal hernia. So this is a picture. This is an endoscopy of a patient we've taken care of in the last few years. There's mesh. I'm not sure which type this is, but it's eroded into the stomach. Fortunately, you can commonly take this out with the endoscope. You can see and this is another patient from us where I'm just going to demonstrate how difficult it is to get this mesh out when you have to take it out from a laparoscopic or open perspective. I don't even do this kind of surgery. It's so difficult. We only have 1 or 2 surgeons in our department do it so that they can become proficient. This operation is being performed by my partner, Dr. Middle. But you can see how difficult it is to separate this Gore-Tex prosthesis all of the surrounding structures, including the esophagus and the stomach, are at extreme risk for damage. It has to be done very precisely with clear visualization, no blood around, and that's very difficult because these are commonly very inflamed and everything sort of oozes, but you have to establish the planes between this retained foreign body and. And this kind of surgery has to be done in, not just for erosion or for infection, but for any time that the operation's not working and the patient has dysphagia. This kind of a dissection is going to be required if a prosthesis has been used. But eventually, he was able to tease this off. Once it's liberated, then he has to do something about reconstructing the hiatus. Fortunately, in this case, there was pretty good crura available. I'm not sure that why the mesh was used in the first place. So what are the issues concerning mesh repair? Well, first would be the indication. Well, clearly our feeling is that despite recommendations to the contrary in the literature and even the recent literature, one has to be extremely cautious about using mesh at the esophageal hiatus, and it should only be done in only the when absolutely necessary, and there's no other alternative in our opinion. Now, what type of mesh, if you're going to do it, what type of mesh are you going to use? You know, there's not really good evidence in the literature that one is better, one type of prosthesis is better than the other. These are the prostheses that are available to you, heavyweight versus lightweight, polypropylene versus polyester, coated versus non-coated versus Gore-Tex, and synthetic versus biological. The heavyweight meshes, this is just a list of the non-composite heavyweight meshes which might be used, including Proline, Marlex, Surgipro, Priatex. The non-composite heavyweight membranes, which would be the Gore-Tex type products, and then the non-composite lightweight plastic meshes, which would be UltraPro or ProLite. Just to go through a few of these quickly, UltraPro is a combination of polypropylene and polydax in PDS. So it's a very lightweight mesh because the PDS dissolves eventually. Some people like to use that. This is a similar compound, ProLite Ultra, very similar lightweight mesh. The composites prostheses, I don't think we should be using these in the esophageal hiatus at all. They're too heavy. They're a combination of both EPTFE and polypropylene, and they're just too heavy to be used in this area and just asking for trouble. This is composites. Dual mesh. This is a popular prosthesis for that surgeons place at the hiatus. It's got a roughened side to place against the crura and then a smooth side to place against the fundoplication. Coated prostheses, I don't know if they're going to have a place or not in the esophageal hiatus. There's the heavyweight and lightweight varieties. Whether that coating will prevent the kind of complications that I've been showing you, it remains to be seen. This is C-Cure, another coated prosthesis with omega-3 fatty acid coating for the adhesion barrier. This is Priatex, and that's got a polyethylene glycol-based. And then time mesh we talked about before, a combination of titanium and polypropylene. And the last one is SepraMesh, which has basically SepraFilm and polypropylene, or Proceed. Is the Johnson & Johnson contribution to this area with, and they use a product called Interseed. It's very similar to Surgicil, oxidized regenerated cellulose for their coating. What about synthetics? I think if you're going to do this, I think this is probably a good place for the synthetics. As I mentioned earlier, we prefer bovine pericardium veritas, but there's very few indications for biological meshes anywhere nowadays, but I think this might be one, although complications have been reported to them also. That's veritas there. Now, the optimal technique for placement? Well, there's many techniques that have been described for placing mesh. Now, this is just a simple crural closure. This is the same thing except using a running suture instead of a interrupted suture. But mesh can be used in a buttress fashion, like here, as pledgets or as strips of either polypropylene or a biological to just reinforce the crural closure. And that probably is not going to cause too much problem. This is the worrisome one here, where a large piece of mesh, as I showed in the video, is used to widely overlap the crural closure. And that's where the problems arise. Another technique is to place an inlay above the fundoplication or the esophagus. Or you can do an inlay below. A technique that we like quite a bit is this, if you can do it. If you can open the right side of the crura, lateral to the crura, and create a space there and do an inlay there, and so it stays away from the esophagus, and that may allow you enough to get a tension-free crural closure primarily. This is a complete surrounding of the entire esophagus with a large prosthesis. A lot of people feel this is dangerous, more dangerous than even the other techniques. Various shapes for the mesh that you can use, A shapes, U shapes. There's a U-shaped prosthesis. So what do people do nowadays? Well, this is a paper from Sages, where their members of Sages were polled as to what they do. They got 275 responses dealing with 5,486 mesh repairs, of which most were laparoscopic, 77% versus 23%. The prosthetic material types were biomaterial in 28%, Gore-Tex in 25%, and polypropylene in 21%. Suture was the most common way of fixating them, 56%. Complication rates were low, failure 3%, stricture 0.2%. The trends noted were that biomaterials were associated with failure. That's not really been the experience in our shop, though. Non-absorbable associated with stricture and erosion. So people are beginning to realize this is a problem. So the conclusion was that prosthetic material decreased the recurrence rate and no one mesh was superior to the other. Our feeling in this whole matter is that a relaxing incision with primary hiatal closure, as I showed in one of those slides, is probably the best if you can do it. The only other option, though, is an onlay buttress beneath the esophagus over your crural repair. So that's the relaxing incision and a primary repair, and that's the buttress. So conclusion, complications related to synthetic mesh placement at the esophageal hiatus are more common than previously reported. Multicenter prospective studies are needed to determine the best method and type of mesh for implantation. Now I'm just going to leave you with, I'm going to just run a few minutes of this video. This was sent to me by Ed Felix from California. Probably many of you know him. I think it's a good demonstration of what a mess you can get into with these prosthetics. So it's a patient that had a prosthetic repair and basically was miserable from the time of when the surgery was performed. And this is what Dr. Felix found when he re-explored the patient. You can see this dense fibrosis at the esophageal height. It's hard to even get to the prosthesis, and when he does, it's full of pus. And it comes out in
it's been completely destroyed by the infection, and it comes out in pieces. You can see this. You can see the spiral tacks used to keep it in place, and you can. I think you can appreciate why the patient was so miserable. But I think that I don't think we need to look at this whole video. It's 10 minutes long, and we don't have enough time for that. But it's just I'm just trying to make the point that this is a real problem, and we've really got to be careful with using mesh at the esophageal hiatus. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Fitzgibbon. So that gives us some food for thought regarding putting meshes in.